Good afternoon. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jisook Yee. It has been a wild week. The S&P 500 took just six trading days to go from record highs to a correction. Let's get to John Najarian right away. He's a CNBC analyst. He's a co-founder of Najarian Family Office and also the website marketrebellion.com. Hi, John.
Hello. Great to be back with you. Thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you here. We want to hear your take on this crazy week.
Well, the first 6 days of the week were all basically every rally was sold. And the reason you can tell that is by the volume increase. So in other words, if on a particular 1 minute or 2 minute chart, you see volumes accelerating when the market gets to a high and it exhausts itself and then trades right back down, that's what I'm talking about. They were aggressively selling for the last 6 days, every rally. Now, today is the first day for your listeners that we've actually seen buyers come in aggressively in big volume numbers. So even though the market's down 500 points or wherever it is at this second, there's stocks like Microsoft that are $10 off the bottom today. So that's something that's going to provide more balance than just a straight one-way downward ticket, and that's a good sign.
So do you think there's been enough selling that there's sort of an exhaustion of selling and Monday should be better?
It's possible. What I think happens, this is just I was talking with our guy that follows the Fed more closely even than I do, and that would be Steve Leisman. He's the former deputy editor over at the Wall Street Journal and so forth. Steve's was, he and I were making odds that we see some sort of coordinated central bank statement over the weekend. Probably not rate cuts, but probably something along the lines of, we have been monitoring the situation and we're ready to act with any and all authority as well as tools that are in their toolbox to basically stabilize markets. I think a statement like that would go a long way towards ameliorating some of the fears that the investors have right now.
So are the futures markets right now betting on a rate cut?
Well, yes, they are, but not this weekend. Thank you. They're betting on a rate cut. They've gone up all the way to 100% chance in the March meeting that we're going to get a rate cut. I think they could do an awful lot of good just by talking, jawboning, making a coordinated statement, like I say, because this is a global issue. It's not just China. It's not just the United States, not just Iran. It's the whole world. So seeing a coordinated statement would be something that would be both deserved and necessary, I think, right about now.
So, John, the station's been getting worried callers all week about their portfolios and their money. How concerned should our listeners be?
I don't think all that concerned, to tell the truth. As far as deadly, Corona can be a pretty deadly virus, but as far as more deadly than the Spanish flu or cholera or any of the, you know, huge things that have plagued humanity, no, this isn't in the same ballpark, but we're acting as if it is, and that's a problem because fear spreads very quickly.
Okay, well, John, I know that you always see this also as buying opportunities, so what's your stock tip of the day, if you've got one?
Well, we were buying Microsoft, the stock that I talked about, because of the institutional money coming back in. This is a stock that was 190 just a couple weeks ago, and today, maybe 10 days ago, is 190. Today, you were able to buy it at 150, 152, 155. We bought at all those levels, and it traded up through 160. So we'll keep our eye on that one, MSFT Microsoft.
Thank you, John. We know you're a busy man, so we really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
G here with a Wintrust Business Lunch. And here for you now, joining the show, is Chris Geyer. He's the CEO of Sikich Corporation, and he's also a former law enforcement officer. We thought it would be great to have you on the show today, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Of course, after the tragic news that happened in Milwaukee at the Molson Coors plant, we figured that it might be a good idea to have you on for all the folks that are managing people and talk about workforce safety.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, it's becoming a topic that we're having to talk about all too often. You know, it used to be that events like this were the exception. You know, unfortunately, now they're becoming the rule. There seems to be more and more workplace violence every time we turn around. And, of course, we've had a couple of them that have been, you know, very close to home. You know, one out in Aurora last year, a couple years prior in Chicago, and then, of course, the one just 2 days ago up in Milwaukee. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate situation we're dealing with in the business community at this point, and we just know that we need to be prepared.
Well, Chris, you were an expert on workforce safety, and Sikich is a professional services firm, and you guys recently conducted a national survey about companies' workforce safety experiences and practices. What are some of the surprising findings that you found?
Yeah, we sure did. One of the biggest things, I think, is that nearly three-quarters of the companies that we surveyed had not conducted any type of employee training in the prior 12 months. Together with that, over 34% of these companies have actually experienced, their employees have actually experienced some sort of violence or a threat of violence made against them or another employee. So oftentimes we think about these things as very isolated events, but they're really not. I mean, the vast majority of these workplace violence issues take place with employees, with people that are known to one another. We're not really talking as much about these sort of ideological terroristic events that do occur, but the vast majority of these things are occurring among our employee groups. And so, you know, for us, we thought, man, this is too big of an issue to ignore, and we need to jump on this and get at the forefront of it.
So you were saying a lot of companies are neglecting key workforce safety measures. What are some of the most important things that a company can do to keep their employees safe?
Right. Well, I mean, this is we don't have enough time to talk about all of them. Certainly, it's a very broad topic. It's comprehensive. There, of course, with all of the physical security aspects that one would imagine that seems, you know, very basic. We certainly have those issues in place too. But frankly, we wanted to focus more on our employees and our employees' ability to identify early on, if they can, identify you know, different types of behavior in other employees that may be, you know, undergoing some sort of stress or going through some sort of crisis. So, sort of this idea that we have this concept of if you sense something, say something. So it's more than just if you hear something. If you just feel like something's not right, you know, with a particular employee, we've put in place confidential tools for reporting that type of thing, and so that we in management and leadership can follow up. And with obviously the idea that we're, at the end of the day, we want our workplaces, not only our own offices where our people work, but we, as you know, we have more than 1,000 people across the country now, and they're out in offices of our clients on a regular basis as well. And so we just wanted to be able to give them information and training so that they had some idea if something like some workplace violence incident were to occur, that they'd have some, at least some basis, some background, some training to be able to know how to respond.
So having an anonymous reporting platform is very important.
Yeah, it really is. I think that's one of the biggest issues people have is, okay, I have sensed something, I've heard something, I've seen something, it doesn't seem right to me, what do I do with it, right? And so having that anonymous, that confidential reporting mechanism is a key element to the program. And then the follow-up is really, you know, certainly as important. And we've got what we call a threat assessment team, and that's head up by our HR department. And they take a look into all of these reports that come in via that system. And we treat them all very seriously.
And it's important to educate employees as well on what signs to look for. Some people may not realize that something serious is happening.
Well, no, you're 100% right about that. And so, and you know, so there's a bit of a fine line there. You know, the three sort of core elements that our program is based on are courtesy, respect, and safety. So if you kind of keep all those things in mind, you still, as you're going about your day, you're still realizing that, hey, I may be in contact with an employee that's going through, one of my colleagues, my coworkers is going through a difficult time and starting to see signs of, you know, irritability, or maybe they're withdrawing from their peer groups, or they're constantly blaming somebody else for something, you know, things of that kind, you know, performance declines that people can actually witness. So those are all examples, just a few examples of what employees can see in others that would cause them to pause and go, I wonder if this person's okay, and how can I go about, you know, helping them. You know, we're not, this isn't a gotcha. We're not trying to catch people. We're trying to identify early signs of someone who might be in distress, and hopefully, if we can, you know, get them some help.
Talking with Chris Geyer, he's a CEO of Sickage. You're running a company, you're responsible for workers, you're responsible for lives, and you say that this can't just be solely an HR issue or a facilities issue. This has to be something that the entire C-suite takes responsibility for.
Yeah, I'm passionate about that. Certainly, I have a strong affinity for safety and security in my former law enforcement days. But I really do. I think this is a cultural thing, and I think one of the reasons that it probably doesn't get the attention that it gets is because, at least anecdotally, people believe that, well, this is never going to happen to us. The probability of having a workplace violence incident is so low that it's a sort of a risk-reward proposition. But I tend to look at this in a much different way. You know, I often said to people, you know, even if the chance is one in a million, you don't want to be the one. And so to the extent that we can help our employees and do a better job, you know, arming them and making sure that at least they have some information, some training, that in the event there is an incident, you know, that we're going to be better prepared for it. And I know from my days, both on tactical teams and working undercover, that preparedness is everything. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I think it becomes a very cultural thing. It's important for employees, our employees, all employees working in organizations, that their leadership, you know, cares about their safety and is looking out for them as best they can every day.
So if it's the standard is set from the very top, then everyone will follow suit and take it seriously as well. I was surprised to see that one of the stats said that nearly 70% of companies have not conducted in-person employee training within the last year. What type of in-person employee training do you recommend?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, we ran all of our folks through training over the last couple of years, more than 1,600 hours last year alone. And it's a comprehensive training program that goes through, as I talked earlier, about a lot of recognition, early signs of disturbing behavior, things of that nature. How do you deal with that? What do you do with it? We train our people. We teach our people, you know, what to do with that. What to do in the case of an emergency. How do we respond to that? You know, and then of course the physical aspects of it. You know, we've got all of our doors to all of our offices locked, and we have cameras, and we have evacuation teams and things of that nature. So, you know, we're not trying to be overly cautious, but we do want people to be prepared. And I know from experience that if you're prepared and you practice, that's how you'll play in the game.
And does this training also incorporate the practice of actual physical drills as well?
It does. In fact, we have the third installment of our program this year that will include actual drills, yes.
So if a manager is listening right now and they want to get some guidance and maybe follow suit with what you guys have done, how do they find out more information?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So they can anybody on the outside. I'm hopeful that our sort of leadership in this area, not only in our industry and professional services, but broadly, I am more than happy to lend myself to other C-suite leaders to help develop them and help sort of kick this program off in their companies, much the same way we've done in ours. And for new people coming into our business, whether leadership or otherwise, as staff individuals, we have Sickage University, and we have these trainings that all of our employees went through in the last 2 years available to them to see online. Any of our new folks can go through this training, and we encourage them to do that anytime, via the digital transfer that we've got the capability available within Sickets University. But out on the outside, I'm more than willing to step up and sort of take the leadership role here and help other companies kick this off, because it's an undertaking. There's no question about that.
And of course, you guys are all over the country, but you do have offices here in Chicago.
We do, yes.
Fantastic. Well, and give me your website one more time.
Yeah, it's sickich.com, sikich.com.
Well, thank you so much to CEO Chris Geyer of Sickich. And he's also a former undercover police officer. So who to know better than he? Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you having me on, and have a great afternoon.
You as well. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for keeping it right here on WGN Radio throughout your day. Here for you now is economist Mark Grimaldi. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic to have you on the show. I know that you have over 30 years experience in personal finance, and you're saying that a lot of people don't realize that your 401k could potentially be a huge tax trap.
That is correct. Unfortunately, that is the truth, and this is why America is heading into, or maybe already be in, a retirement crisis, because 401ks are really, we were sold to get in a 401k, get a small tax deduction today, but what the book does, Retire Smart, very simply explains what happens when you retire, and the amount of taxes that a 401k generates is actually going to shock you.
So give us some of the cliff notes. How much, is it really going to cost you? Because what we're hearing is that, we have to take advantage of our employer's plan, and we have to take advantage also of the employer matching as well, and that it's a good thing to put your money into your 401k.
That is correct. And if you're one of the few lucky ones who have an employer match, fantastic. Okay, but 90% of 401k participants don't have an employer match. So they put their money in. Here's a couple of things just to keep in mind. Number one, when you make your investment into a 401k, in the mutual funds that are available in the 401k, they have an appreciation over time. Yes, the market's had a bad few weeks, but over time they have an appreciation, and that appreciation is a capital gain. If you have that capital gain outside of a 401k, for 95% of us, that gain is 100% tax-free, because it's taxed at the capital gain rate. When you have that gain inside your 401k, that 401k will hold on to that gain for you and distribute to you when you retire as income, which is the highest tax. So it's converting a tax-free event to a high tax event, and a lot of people just don't understand that.
So you're really recommending that there's tax diversification.
Exactly. A lot of great no-load mutual fund companies out there are starting to develop what they call tax-managed mutual funds, no-load funds, low-cost funds that you can invest your money in. If you're getting the match from the 401k, stay with it. If you're not, divert that money into a tax-managed fund and take advantage of the capital gains rate. This is why Warren Buffett said his secretary is in a higher tax bracket than he is, because he's investing his money with these tax-managed funds and with the capital gains rate. The rest of us are managing our money and getting hit with income tax rate.
Okay, so you mentioned three steps to improving your saving strategy. You just mentioned one. What's another?
Another one is very simple. We all can earn up to $12,500 a year tax-free in this country. It's called the standard deduction. We all need to take advantage of that standard deduction. So the first money that you earn this year, the first $12,500 for an individual, is completely tax-free. Take as much money as that as you can afford and put that into these tax manager funds. So now it goes in there tax-free, and it'll grow tax-free depending on your tax bracket. So there's two ways to just start the whole cycle to grow a tax-free retirement that most Americans, when they file the tax return, they take advantage of the standard deduction, but they don't understand exactly the right way to do it. By page 10 of Retire Smart, you're going to see that your life has changed and that there's a better way to go about it. Yes, I'm an economist, but the book is written for mom and pop to understand, simple to use, simple to apply.
And what's the third step that you recommend?
The third step is now you're in retirement and you need to start pulling money out.
Uh-huh.
If you have a 401k, the IRS looks at all those distributions as its wages that you just earned. Mistake, because that's added on top of any kind of Social Security benefits or any other benefits that you have. This is added on top of those earnings, so it puts you in a higher tax bracket.
Because the thinking is that once you do pull money out of your 401k, that you'll be in a lower tax bracket.
That is the traditional thinking, and that's the sales pitch we all fell for. In Retire Smart, I proved that that is incorrect. Number one, as an economist for 30 years, I've never had somebody walk in my office and say, now I'm retired, I'm in a lower tax bracket. Number two, with $22 trillion in debt in this country, where that money's going to come from is all of our pension plans. And where that is in 401ks. The old expression, you know, why'd you rob the bank? Because that's where the money was. The government needs this money. The biggest pile of money that they can get this from is our pensions. So nobody's retiring in a lower tax bracket. They're retiring in a higher tax bracket. And just to reinforce my point, right now there's a lot of politicians saying we need to increase income taxes, we need to do this, a fee on that, a fee on this. None of them are talking about raising the capital gains rate because that's their meal ticket. They know how to take advantage of the capital gains rate. And the book shows the everyday person how to take advantage of that capital gains rate, which for most of us is tax-free. So now you're retired, you have these tax-managed funds, you go to pull money out, the first $33,000 that you pull out is 100% tax-free. Double that if it's a married couple. Period. End the conversation. And the final step of where it gets even better is, God forbid you pass away with a 401k, your heirs are going to pay income tax on all that. My plan, God forbid you pass away and you still have money left, your heirs inherit it at a stepped-up basis, meaning they don't pay taxes on it. It sounds complicated, but let me tell you, it's so simple. And the reason that nobody's talking about it is the government doesn't want us talking about this because they created these pension plans.
So
Wall Street doesn't want you talking about it because they make a fortune off these pension plans.
So, Mark, you're suggesting that when you retire, that you can't just... It's a good idea not just to be withdrawing strictly from a 401k, that you kind of need multiple sources.
Multiple sources, and you hit the nail on the head. I talk about in the book multiple buckets. That's exactly you hit the nail right on the head. You need to have multiple buckets because an after-tax bucket is just that, after-tax, and you can live off that without any of the restrictions of a 401k.
What about managing your Medicare premiums when you retire?
Oh, boy, now we're getting into a whole nother bucket. A lot of people have, at this point, they don't have the money to buy these supplemental policies, so they're doing without, and that's a huge expense. And the reason I say it's a huge, but it's also a huge risk because you don't know what that expense can be. You could figure out what your taxes will be. You could figure out what things are. When it comes to a medical expense, you have no idea how to guesstimate what that's going to be from year to year or day to day. So this is why if we can reduce our income taxes, we can have extra money to buy those policies that we need to protect us.
And, of course, we've been hearing a lot about diversification this week as well with everything happening in the markets. So, Mark, tell us about this book. It's Retire Smart. You've been telling us throughout the interview, but it's called Retire Smart, and we can get a free copy, right?
Yes. The book so far has won 3 national awards. It was actually named the 2019 Financial Book of the Year. You can go on this. You can go on Amazon and buy the book, and that's great. But I recommend you go on my site, retiresmartbook.com. If you put in the code radio, you will get a book, free book, mailed to you, personalized by me, out in the mail. That offer is good for the next 24 hours.
Okay.
Retiresmartbook.com. Put in radio, and by page 10. Your life will be different.
And there's no difference between this free book versus one we'd buy on Amazon, right?
Other than the free book having a signature, no difference.
There you go. It's called Retire Smart, and it's a plan for a tax-free retirement. Mark Grimaldi, thank you so much for all of your tips. Really appreciate you being on the show today.
My pleasure.
G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hope you're finding the silver lining today, despite what's going on in the markets. Listen, hey, you made it through the week. It's Friday. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. And here for you now is the ClearCover founder and CEO. ClearCover probably sounds really familiar because we've talked about it on the show before, but it's a local Chicago startup, and basically they have entered the automobile insurance industry, and they are apparently disrupting the future of the entire industry. And here to talk about it is Kyle Nakasuchi. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, G. How are you?
Fantastic to have you on the show. So congratulations. You recently raised $50 million. That was your Series C funding.
That's right. Thank you.
Why do you think you were able to do that? What's so compelling about what you guys are doing?
So car insurance is a really big market. It's about $250 billion per year. But there hasn't been a lot of change in it, and it's been around for a long time. So we are trying to rebuild car insurance with a tech-first approach. In many ways, it's like what Southwest did in the airline space. We've lowered the cost of running an insurance company so we can provide a great product to consumers at more affordable prices. And we're excited about that. Consumers seem to be excited about it, and so are investors.
So was there any hesitation at all? Because you're kind of on the home turf of State Farm, which is based in Bloomington, and Allstate, which is based in Northbrook. And, of course, these are huge, large insurers that have a lot of brand loyalty.
Yeah, not hesitancy. I mean, we have a lot of respect for what those companies do and have achieved. I mean, they're much more than we have, without question. And in fact, you know, we've studied the history of those companies to help inform how we think about building our own. But, you know, that said, I think we also have our own lane. I think we've taken the opportunity of building a company from scratch, which affords you all sorts of chances to think from first principles about how they work, to build a more efficient machine that we think can offer consumers this great product at lower prices. And again, it's there's plenty of market. I don't think we spend a lot of time worrying about what the other insurers are doing or not doing. We spend most of our time focusing on how we can best help our customers.
So let's talk about a little bit more about this cost efficiency that you say you really have because of your technology advantage. Can you go through that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, you know, at a very high level, what we did is we from the beginning, deconstructed all of the things you had to do to run an insurance organization. And our key benefit was we looked at all of those things with a tech-first lens. We decided to build all of the functionality required to exist as an insurance organization with that tech-first approach. And so whether that's sort of buying a policy online through us or through one of our partners, or perhaps using our mobile app, which allows you to sort of make file claims or change your payment type or do any sort of the policy servicing activities you might want to do. All of these are like tech-centric approaches to building an insurance experience and engagement that help us lower our costs. And then again, those costs get passed through to our customers in the form of lower rates.
And that tech was built in-house?
We did. We built that tech in-house. We have a fantastic product technology, engineering, design, development team that did all that work.
So basically, the claims are handled digitally, and the policies are therefore cheaper because everything's sort of done online and it's streamlined.
So we have an app that we provide when you become a customer, and about 90% of our customers use that app, which is great. But I'll tell you, you know, we also make it a point to engage customers on their own terms. So if you want to talk to people, we have some fantastic customer advocates here who are happy to do that. If you prefer to, you know, deal with your policy digitally, we've built tools that allow you to do that too. And I think it's the combination of using those things in the right proportions when the customer desires them that helps us be more efficient.
So you're saying despite the heavy tech focus, you can still talk to a real person if you want to, and customer service doesn't suffer?
Customer service does not suffer. I think, you know, we've taken that tech-first approach not just to engaging with the consumer, but how the people who work here engage with their jobs and they engage with consumers. So you do not have to give up efficiency to still, you know, talk to a human when that's what you desire to do.
I'm guessing with this last round of, you know, money that you've raised, that you're hoping to expand as well. What's sort of the outlook right now? I know you're still headquartered in Chicago.
We're still headquartered in Chicago. We are, you know, we have, I think, two primary sort of areas of growth. We want to grow the number of states that we operate in. So we currently operate in six states, including right here in Illinois. Our goal is to get to 50 as quickly as possible. And then we're also focused on hiring. We have to, about double our headcount this year in just about all the areas of the business. But primarily, it looks like product engineering, data science, and some of our customer service teams all need a lot of additions this year.
Great. So how many people are you hoping to hire this year?
It should be about 100. It could be 100 to 120, depending on the plan.
I'm guessing they can just head over to your website if they're interested in applying?
Yes. So clearcover.com, our careers page is there, and it'll tell you not only what jobs are open, but I think it'll give you a really good sense of why we exist as a company and the kind of people that work here and what our goals are.
And I'm guessing you can head over there, too, if you are interested in getting a policy for your car.
That is correct. So you can find us at clearcover.com. You can get a quote right there. We also work with, a variety of partners who are in the insurance sales space, whether that's, independent agencies in the Illinois area or, insurance shopping websites online. You can find us in a lot of places because of the tech we've built, and we like it that way.
So how's it feel to be a disruptor, Kyle?
It feels like a massive opportunity that comes with a lot of responsibility. And to be honest, we don't disruption is this term that gets bandied about quite a bit. And I think if you're taking a customer-centric view of the world, disruption is bad. The last thing we want to do is disrupt our customer. So we focus more on creating customer value and building an organization that can grow and have long-term success. And if that means disruption in the industry, so be it. But I don't think it's required.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Kyle Nakasuchi. He is the co-founder and CEO of ClearCover. And I am sure with more success, more folks will follow suit. So congratulations and thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, G.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.